Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The ticking time bomb of interest-only mortgages. How people who have had cancer can be charged four times as much for the travel insurance. And the roaring cybercrime wave that's targeting property buyers. Welcome to The Money Show, the FT's weekly podcast on personal finance and investing. I'm Hugo Greenhouse, the FT's wealth correspondent, and I'll be bringing you this week's money news in downloadable form. Around one in five outstanding mortgages in the UK are classified as interest-only, where the borrower pays back the interest every month but doesn't make a dent in the underlying capital. This means that home buyers face a dilemma when their mortgage term expires. How on earth are they going to repay debts of potentially hundreds of thousands of pounds? Joining me to discuss in the FT studio is Amy Williams, FT Money Reporter, who has written about this issue this week. Welcome, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
You write in your piece that it's crunch time for two major tranches of interest-only loans. What's that about?
Well, the regulator, the city regulator, has got its eye on two particular batches of interest-only loans, one of which is set to mature this year and next year. So these loans were issued in the 90s, and they tend to be called endowment mortgages. So it's a form of interest-only mortgage that was sold alongside an investment plan of some sort that is designed to outperform the market, give you great returns and allow you to pay off your capital. But when the regulator just checked up on the health of these mortgages, it found that maybe there was not a great deal of outperformance going on and perhaps there might be some trouble brewing. So it has kind of stepped in to deal with that a little bit. And then the other tranche of loans is set to mature a little bit later. These are straightforward interest-only mortgages which were issued in the run-up to the credit crunch where mortgage lending was a bit freer and easier and lenders were lax in their lending, or laxer than they are now.
Now, two things there. I mean, the first of all is that they sound terribly fiddly things, basically. And second, the fact that the financial regulator has been caught out before, but it sounds like the financial regulator has got their eye on this. But could it be another subprime mortgage crisis?
Well, the Financial Conduct Authority, so that is the city regulator I just referred to, did actually take some big steps around 4 years ago to restrict who could take out an interest-only mortgage. And they also asked lenders, mostly banks, to write to borrowers and check up on how they plan to repay, and if necessary, to encourage them to move on to repayment mortgages or part repayment mortgages, meaning they'll start paying off the capital as they go. So this means that lots of people have moved onto a different payment plan, and that should avert the worst of any kind of repayment crisis. Nowadays, though, interest-only mortgages are coming back. We've got several lenders who've moved back into the space recently, having left it in the immediate aftermath of the financial crisis. But the conditions under which they lend are much stricter. They'll only issue these kinds of mortgages to the wealthiest even, people who have a serious investment portfolio and a serious plan in place to repay these mortgages.
Because it does sound like, just listening to this, quite a kind of bonkers idea for the general public, if nothing else. But for the wealthy, you can see the point from a kind of buy-to-let perspective. But let's look at the worst-case scenario. What would happen to borrowers who don't have sufficient equity or income to get a conventional mortgage? Could they lose their homes?
I mean, if they have an interest-only mortgage and at the end the bank wants that capital portion back and the person, the borrower, doesn't have that capital, then yes, technically the lenders could force them to sell the home to repay the debt. The thing that works in the borrower's favour here is obviously house prices have gone up quite significantly over the last 10 years or more. And so these people now are able to potentially downsize and move into a smaller property and release some money that way. And around this idea, a whole new kind of mortgage has become quite popular, and that's an equity release mortgage. So this is where lenders lend against the value of your home, and you don't have to pay it back until the end of your life. The problem with these is that they're quite expensive kinds of loans, and obviously you're relying on there always being extra equity in your house, so, you know, prices continuing to go up or at least staying the same as they are now.
Well, thank you very much there to Amy Williams. It's quite a kind of minefield to get our heads around. But you can read all about the issues surrounding interest-only mortgages in FT Money on Saturday as part of the FT Weekend newspaper, or catch up online from Friday morning at ft.com/money. Looking forward to your summer break? Well, if you haven't sorted out your travel insurance yet, then here's a reminder. But did you know that people who have had cancer can be charged 4 times as much for an annual policy? This rather startling fact was revealed this week by Macmillan Cancer Support, the charity, and has overtones of the situation in the early 1990s, when a lot of people living with HIV also faced huge premiums on their insurance policies. But I'm joined now by Lucy Schoonerhevel, who's Public Affairs Manager at Macmillan Cancer Support. Welcome, Lucy. Now, talk me through what your research has found.
So our research published this week has found that thousands of people affected by cancer are being charged over £1,000 for their travel insurance, when actually the average price for you and I without any medical condition is about £37. So that's significantly more. We also know of thousands of people affected by cancer from this research who said that they couldn't get a travel insurance policy at all, despite the fact that they, in many cases, were actually cured from cancer over a decade ago. So this is having a huge impact on people affected by cancer. In many cases, it means that they're just not able to go on holiday at all. In some cases, it means that they are actually paying thousands of pounds, and at a time of their life when they may have just gone through treatment, and the financial impact of cancer is quite significant anyway because of travel costs and so on. And this is then on top of that, you know, at a time of their life when they may, you know, they deserve to go on holiday and
well,
have recovered from treatment.
I mean, are they told by the insurer when they go for insurance that it could cost more because they have had cancer treatment? Is it actually explicit somewhere?
So one of the things that we've also found from this research is that in some cases they may go through a process of kind of ticking the box that they've had cancer, and then the travel insurance company then loads on a huge premium, and they find out how much the premium is, they find out how much the policy is that they're being offered, but there's no explanation as to why they're being charged £1,000. So not only is it's really untransparent, people don't know what they can do about it, they don't know whether they can call back and, you know, call up someone and find out if they can get it reduced. And they also, in a lot of cases, feel like they then probably it's not worth then going and shopping around, because they think that that's the same across the board.
We'll come back to what you can do about it in a second, but let's look at this. Let's play devil's advocate at this point. But if you've got a serious medical condition like cancer, should you not expect insurers to charge you more, as you might be at higher risk of needing treatment abroad?
It's absolutely right. In a lot of cases, there is a higher risk. For example, people who maybe have terminal cancer. However, in so many cases we heard through this research, people had doctor's notes to say that they were fit to travel. And also, everyone's been tarnished with the same brush. So there are some travel insurance providers that they see the tick box of cancer and then they load on this huge premium. They don't try and find out any more information. And the reason behind this, we understand, is because they're using out-of-date data. So travel insurance companies are looking at data that is really out of date, that they believe that cancer is still a death sentence, that not many people get it, when actually we now know that 1 in 2 of us will get cancer by 2020. And also survival rates have doubled since the 70s.
But they're just putting everybody in the same box, basically. You've got cancer, doesn't matter if you're in remission, doesn't matter if it was 10 years ago,
exactly.
It's just the same thing, basically, and at which point your insurance will go through the roof.
Exactly.
Well, let's look at that in that case, what people can do about that. And the Financial Conduct Authority has said it's concerned about this and launched a call for evidence. What do you hope this will achieve?
Yeah, we're so pleased that the FCA has recognised this problem and have launched this call for input. And Macmillan was really pleased to actually be able to take part in that and to input into it. And what we're hoping this will achieve is that it will put a bit of pressure on the travel insurance industry to use up-to-date data. So, and to make sure that they're being open and transparent about what data they are using, and therefore stop kind of pricing people out of the market.
And can people get in touch with Macmillan Direct as well and ask you for help?
Exactly. So they can get in contact with us. People affected by cancer can get in contact with us and tell us their stories so that we can feed in. And we also have an online community where people can go online, they can talk to other people who've had experience of trying to get travel insurance quotes and find out where people got good deals.
Well, let's ask that. Did you have the online address in that case?
Yeah, so if you go to www.macmillan.org.uk, there'll be something on the front webpage, and please do click on that. Please do tell us your stories. And also to the travel insurance industry, please do feed into the call for input by the FCA as well.
Lucy, thank you very much for that. Shocking stuff there, actually. But thank you very much for joining us this morning. You can read the story now and find out how to respond to the consultation on ft.com/money. And finally, it's your worst financial nightmare. You save up to buy your dream home, agree a deal, and send your hard-earned money to the conveyancing solicitor to complete the purchase. Except you didn't send it to the solicitor, you sent it to a fraudster pretending to be the solicitor. And when the police try and trace the cash, it's vanished into a thicket of offshore accounts. This potentially ruinous scenario is now playing out more often, according to new data from the Solicitors Regulation Authority. The number of incidents in the first 3 months of this year has more than doubled compared with last. James Pickford, FT Money Deputy Editor, has been probing the issue of conveyancing fraud and joins us now. James, thank you for joining us. Talk me through this. It's quite complicated. How does it all work?
Well, there are a couple of ways in which it typically works, both involving email, typically. Well, it's the first way is that the fraudster pretends to be the solicitor using a sort of masked or subtly changed email address. They email you and say, we've just changed our bank details. You need to send it to this bank account. And of course, you do that and it vanishes. In the second variant, the fraudster pretends to be the seller and persuades the solicitor's office that they changed their bank account details and they need to send the money to them. And of course, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, which we mentioned, they've come out with some data showing this is on the rise. This in some other research by the City of London Police, they found that the cost can be quite serious. An average of £101,000 is lost
in
this fraud.
So it's actually quite considerable. I mean, that's a massive chunk of your potential house.
It's pretty disastrous.
Okay, I think the main question that most people will be asking is, can I get my money back?
Well, that will depend on which type of fraud you've fallen victim to, essentially. If you, as the buyer, have sent your money to the wrong bank account, and then the bank has done what you've asked them to do, the solicitor isn't involved, so really you have very little redress, and it's pretty disastrous in that case. If the solicitor has sent the money to the wrong place, now solicitors are obliged to insure themselves against this, so as a seller you will get your money, because the insurer will hopefully repay them that money and they can send it on to you.
But as a buyer, no guarantees, and it becomes a criminal matter, and then you're lost in the mire of the courts.
It's pretty catastrophic.
Just how common is this, do you think?
It's still quite rare, thankfully. And, you know, the fraudster has to be lucky enough to get the information that you are selling on a particular date. They have to be clever enough to somehow mask the email account, or you know, typically they might change a letter in the email address to try and fake it. And things have to be, you know, everything has to line up for them. But, you know, as we say, the incidents more than doubled in the first 3 months of this year. And it's becoming more common because people are more familiar and happy to do banking transactions electronically. So that people are just reasonably au fait with using a smartphone to get onto a bank account, to deal with solicitors electronically, and therefore they're more at risk to this kind of fraud.
Okay, so that's the problem, that's the issue we're facing. But so what can I do to make sure, if it would happen to me, that it doesn't happen to me in the first place?
Well, one of the things that people suggest is doing a dummy run payment. So you send over £1 to your solicitor's account and say, I'm going to ring you up. And you ring up the solicitor that you know and you've spoken to, and you say, has the money arrived? And if they say, well, no, then you may have the alarm bells may start ringing. Once you've sent your pound, you send the solicitor and they say, yes, it's got here. Then you can send your full deposit or the completion money as it comes through. And this is happening both in exchange and completion, I should add.
So just to make sure, it goes to Wilkinson's and Sons rather than Wilkinson's and Sons, exactly, just right. Changing the letters. But is this mainly a London problem, do you think? Or is it nationwide?
Actually, it's not. Obviously, London is the place where the biggest gains can be made because house prices, house values are highest there, but it's more of an opportunistic fraud. So whenever the fraudster sees this information coming through, and bear in mind they can gather this kind of information from social media posts, so you've got to be careful there. They could get it. The solicitor could inadvertently reveal this kind of data. That's where it comes through.
Well, we seem to have had a program for problems and issues, but thank you very much, James, for joining us today. If you've got a story you'd like the FT Money team to follow up or a question to pose to our team of financial experts, do drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at money@ft.com, tweet us at FT Money, or comment on articles online at ft.com/money. That's all from The Money Show this week. We'll be back at the usual time next Thursday. Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.